Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
What is up, Internet Radio? You are listening to a recommended reading on food on Heritage Radio Network with Food Book Fair. I'm Amanda Dell.
And I'm Kimberly Chow.
Food Book Fair is a food media festival, and our podcast, Recommended Reading, is all about chatting with our friends and fam in the food media world. So thanks for listening. We are so excited to be joined in the studio today with by the publisher and creator of Glue Glue, a new foodiotical, Jennifer Green.
Foodiotical, that's food plus periodical if you don't listen to the show all the time or know who we are. But it's our signature event. It's our indie food magazine festival within the fair. And it's happening at Smorgasburg, LA, at Row DTLA. March 4th, that's a Sunday, during Food Book Fair LA, the very first West Coast iteration of what we do. And you're probably listening to this right around that time. So pop on down to Row, to downtown LA, and check us out and enjoy all of the amazing food magazines. But we're going to give you a little preview and overview of what's on the food magazine scene right now, including with Jennifer here in studio. We're going to talk about Glue Glue, which stands for glue, 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 which is a sound that delicious natural wine makes going down your throat in French.
And if you are listening to this around the weekend of March 2nd to 4th in LA or a little bit before, check out foodbookfair.com for info about all the programming we'll be doing at Ace Hotel, downtown Los Angeles, and also our bookselling partner, Now Serving. And again, Smorgasburg, LA, hosting us for our Indie Mag Fest foodiotticals.
And you can probably find some of the action as well, or relive it in the after it happens on social media, on Instagram. There's going to be a lot of live Instagram action happening from at Food Book Fair, at Now Serving LA, and at Ace DTLA.
Kim, what are you reading, watching, or listening to these days?
All I've been doing is doing research on where to eat in LA and getting excited about that and sort of reading. I mean, I do that all the time anyway.
That counts as reading.
I'm taking a look back at some cookbooks that have been released recently by friends on the West Coast, specifically in LA. The Night Market Cookbook by Chris Yumbemroom, which is delicious. And also, I love that restaurant, even though it makes my mouth really spicy. Baco, which was one of the very first book events at Now Serving, with Joseph Centeno and Betty Halleck doing an event there and a talk about the book. Hawker Fair by James Seabout, co-written with John Birdsall, who's one of our very favorite writers. We did an event with him a couple years ago where we talked about the intersection of food and queer culture called Gay Food 101, where we did a little preview. He's working on a biography of the great late James Beard, and he's such an eloquent speaker and writer, and also perhaps the new, I say this every week when I read the next Grub Street Diet, but he's the new goat. He really is.
Oh, I loved it, but
I ate buttered toast this morning because I read his Grub Street Diet, and he talks about getting Acme bread.
Okay, right.
And the joys of buttered toast in the morning when you're still sort of fumbling around for the coffee maker. And then Julia Tertian also posted about it. So that was sort of a reminder, again, of Buttered Toast and John Birdsall.
To back up slightly, that is one thing that I have read. I was going to leave the reading, watching, and listening up to you and Jennifer today, but I did thoroughly enjoy John's Grub Street diet.
Yeah, I'm also reading the Tartine All Day cookbook. We did an event with Liz Pruitt from Tartine, who was assisted on that book by Maria Zizka, who's an amazing writer, recipe developer, and friend of Food Book Fair, who spoke at Food Book Fair 2016, is also going to be doing an event about how to do the most and do it for yourself as a multi-hyphenate food person at Food Book Fair LA.
I'm impressed by your very, very meta research on LA. I'm just going to totally soak it in, and you're going to be my guide.
Yeah, I know. I haven't even gotten to the parts about where we can actually eat. And then, but this is one where it would actually apply, and it's not just general West Coast. But LA Mexicano by Bill Esparza is also on my reading list. I'm also looking at all of the foodie articles that have graced us with their presence at Food Book Fair in New York, including Put an Egg on It, which is one of our favorites. Ralph and Sarah also do our graphic design. They've done many other people's graphic design, and they're great at illustration, at photography, amazing different kinds of creative projects. So hit them up. I'm also in one of the more recent issues of Put an Egg on It. It just took me a really long time to get a print copy, but I'm happy to have done that.
Yeah.
So that's on my list.
If you're in the LA area on Sunday, March 4th, come on down to Smorgasburg and check out the best independent food media that magazines that, you know, in the LA area and maybe even beyond.
In the meantime, we're really happy to have Jennifer Green speaking to us in studio in the back of Roberta's Pizza in sunny, sunny Bushwick, Brooklyn, about Glue Glue. Welcome.
Why, hello there.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
What are you reading, watching, or listening to these days?
Reading, watching, listening.
Doesn't have to be food related.
Okay. I'll try to at least make some tangential reference.
Sure. We love hearing about what food and drink people are doing outside of food and drink. Though, you know, it sounds like I only read Grub Street diets all the time, 95% of my time, but
amazing.
Go for it.
So let's start with reading.
Okay.
There's a lovely foodieotical, Future Foodieotical.
That's excellent pronunciation.
Great use of the word.
I'm trying very hard to enunciate. I was told I slurred as a child, so I'm trying very hard right now.
Sounded great.
Great. It's called Compound Butter. It's a magazine that derives its inspiration from food, but it's about art. So just like Glue Glue, it's a way of talking around the subject versus about it. And I talked to these gals yesterday. They are fantastic, sweet as pie. We seem to have a lot of overlap in terms of this idea of storytelling. It's a very hackneyed word at this point, so I guess we could say translating the food and drink experience.
Sure.
And the best, least alienating way to do that, and we both agree, it is, you know, not something that should be elitist or branded as hipster, but it's a very immediate kind of urgent experience that can best be described by overlapping topics like perhaps art or culture or politics, as we've been seeing a lot of these days. So Compound Butter, amazing, amazing read, amazing visuals, very graphic. I personally have drawn a lot of inspiration from them.
They also have such a good name.
They do. They do. So we have reading, watching. At first, I didn't realize this was a food reference. It sort of is in an X-rated way, but I'm sure a lot of you have seen Call Me By Your Name. Nothing like a consensual love story these days. There's a very graphic scene with a peach. I don't really want to go into detail here, but you should go check it out for
yourself. It is a storied scene with a peach.
Very storied.
I understand there have been many think pieces written about what it means, the difference between the novel and the film adaptation of the peach scene.
I thought you were going to say what it means for the peach.
Or what does it? Can the peach give consent?
Exactly.
Or a peach emoji.
Can the peach emoji give consent? Well, it's a...
Which came first, the scene or the peach emoji? We don't know.
the scene.
Okay. Well, maybe emoji was inspired by the scene.
I mean, the peach emoji represents what the peach represents in the book and the film.
Si n'est pas une pêche.
Si.
Si.
Okay.
So let's continue on from there.
We, rather.
Yes. We.
We.
That leaves us with listening. So I should preface this by saying I know we are on internet radio. I have many problems with the internet. one of them is that I feel the internet has very little texture to it. I'm a pretty tactile person. I like to hold things and touch them. I'm really trying to get away from this peach reference.
You seem like the perfect person to make a magazine.
Exactly. Maybe a foolhardy idea, but you got to scratch your own itch, you know? So, you know, I really see the internet as a means and not an end. It's a means for finding things with texture, you know, books you can touch, experiences you can have, foods you can eat, people you can meet. Stop rhyming now.
Rhyming's allowed.
Rhyming's allowed. Okay, great. But yeah, my main issue is that I feel like it lacks texture, so it doesn't really stimulate me in ways that other media does. That being said, internet radio and podcasts are a different variety because voices have so much texture. Mm-hmm. And it's so soothing to hear someone like Evan Kleiman on KCRW Good Food. She's like, she has the voice of a pediatrician and she's telling you where to go eat every week.
Wait, let's back up a little. What does that mean exactly? I haven't been to the pediatrician in a while.
I guess I haven't either, but, you know, I had a pediatrician with a very soothing voice, and she would give us candy after we got shots, and maybe there's some culinary connection there.
Okay, she's the culinary pediatrician.
Culinary pediatrician.
My pediatrician had a koala on her stethoscope, which I think is also a common thing. Candy and the koala, you know, the koala that hugs the stethoscope. No? Okay.
Sorry. Tim's looking at me and I'm thinking of like...
It's fuzzy
probably
now. Texture, speaking
probably
of texture.
Some like hippie pediatrician that I had.
Or these are all like ASMR
city.
Techniques now.
They didn't even like have a stethoscope. Somehow I survived. Thanks, Mom.
But Evan's the best.
She's the best. Love her. Love her counterpart, Jonathan Gold. All the days I was driving around endlessly selling wine in LA, they were such an antidote to traffic. So,
which we
thank you.
We'll definitely get into talking about.
Great. So yeah, I would say podcasts are sort of actually my antidote to the internet. They're the ultimate example of using the internet to find things that give you joy and things that you can do while you're walking around doing other things and not just staring at your screen. I love serialized podcasts. Cereals are like my cereal. I could eat them every day. You know, it started off with the podcast Cereal.
Yes.
And then I loved S-Town. I thought that was a really empathetic look at, you know, a part of the country which would be seen as the polar opposite to where we are today. There was a lot of common ground there, which I liked. And then right now I'm listening to Dissect, which is long-form music. I don't want to say criticism. It's more musical background and theory focused on a specific artist. Each season is dedicated to one artist. Season one was Kendrick Lamar. Season two was Kanye. And they're broken up into very digestible episodes. So I've been walking around New York, hopping on the subway, loving my new public transit life, just kind of binge listening to this, and
awesome.
It's been incredible.
What was dissected on the most recent Kanye related episode?
You know, I am only episode 8 of season 2, but he's done a really good job of breaking down Kanye's breakdown at the VMAs. As sort of precursor to my beautiful dark twisted fantasy. Make sure I said that right. And in particular, the song, the track Gorgeous, how he's brought in all these different musical influences and how he really is a master lyricist and struggled for a while to be taken seriously as a rapper. He started as a producer. So it's just to the point of compound butter and glue glue, I think it's this idea of talking around the subject and giving context that is factual and mm-hmm. also experience-based that kind of removes the layers of intimidation around something that is and should be simple to enjoy, like food, wine, and music, but that can easily get very highfalutin mm-hmm. if you have someone just kind of waxing poetic about their own experiences and rattling off all the vintages that they've enjoyed. It can mm-hmm. be a very alienating experience. So breaking it down into these digestible nuggets is something that I think is a great way to tell that story.
Mm. I like that. Yeah. I like also the natural wine to Kanye connection here.
Do you think Kanye drinks natural wine?
That's a good question.
I'm going to reserve judgment on that. I don't know if Kanye would want it to be labeled natural wine. I think he might just want to enjoy it without the pretension of a label that has no meaning. Natural wine, I think, is very much a term that's in the mouth of the beholder. Mm-hmm. It's not a certification. It's not organic. It's not biodynamic. Yes, it is a loose set of principles and philosophies, but like Henk Beckmeyer from La Carine says, if you label it, you'll kill it. Mm-hmm. And it's much more of a spirit than an actual procedure or a recipe okay. for making wine.
Well, excited to get into that.
Yes.
Definitely a little bit later in the show.
Okay.
But let's back up a little bit and talk about glue glue.
And let's do it.
Talk about what your inspiration was, how you did it. Just getting inside the mind of someone who wanted to make a foodieoticle.
Absolutely. So I had a marketing company in Philadelphia when I used to live there with my friend Lendl, who's now my business partner in Glue Glue. We were doing a lot of branded events and digital content for restaurants and eventually wanted to branch outside of the city. Mm. Our good friend Jason Malumed, who at that point had his own distribution company called Chalkboard, was donating wine to our events and said, you know, you guys are pretty good at telling stories. If you're trying to do something more universal, why don't you do something around wine? So this was, I want to say, about 3 years ago. I got hooked up with an importer, moved to LA to start selling wine so I could learn about it, was sent 6 bottles and was told, go for it. Spent the next 2.5 years driving around LA, technically sipping and driving. Sorry, Mom, I tried to spit. Didn't always happen. But anyway, stuck in traffic, selling wine. It was definitely a trial by fire, but a great way to learn about it and to understand the market. And from this experience, what I saw was the story was getting completely jumbled and lost. And yeah, stories are made up to begin with, so there's that. But there's also this idea that wine is sort of like a game of telephone, you know, like we used to play when we were kids and you go around the circle and you'd see how the story would sort of get distorted by the time it reached the last person. So with wine, you have the story from the winemaker. You have the story passed to the importer and then the distributor and then the many sales reps and then the many buyers and then the many servers and then to the drinker. So I thought, why not cut out all those levels of storytelling and just go straight from the winemaker to the drinker, sort of deliver this raw, unadulterated narrative from the person who made it.
Mm. And that was the inspiration.
That was the inspiration. Yes. And also I felt like we didn't really have a culture around wine, at least growing up in this country. It's much more beer focused.
Yeah.
And now I guess becoming more cocktail focused, but wine still seems very unapproachable to a lot of people.
I want to reference our friend and collaborator, Andre Mack, who has he makes wines under the name Mouton Noir. And you might follow him on Instagram at, you know, Mouton.
Highly recommend a follow.
Highly recommend. But he always talks about wine being a grocery item, not a luxury item.
Grocery item is on point.
He also says wine is a condiment to life.
Wine is like
salt.
That's
a good one.
And it should always, you know, if appropriate, be on the table.
He's also a foodie article maker.
He is. Check out his foodie article, Small Time Cooks.
T-H-Y-M-E.
Yeah. What was your experience with wine growing up, Jennifer? Like, how did you even become interested in it? How did you fall into restaurants?
I guess it was this kind of weird dichotomy of my dad really liking white Burgundy and me not realizing I was really lucky to have a dad that liked white Burgundy, but he also liked really shitty Pinot Grigio.
Bad words are allowed, even though I just looked at our iTunes page and it said clean lyrics.
I think we can definitely refer to some Pinot Grigio as shitty. No problem. Keep going. Not many can be great, but many can keep be great. Going.
This is true.
So sorry, Dad.
High low.
Sorry, Dad, you have great taste, but Santa Margarita is sort of the exception that proves the rule.
Contrary to what you might be thinking, we are actually not drinking during this episode, just so you know. This is a completely sober conversation about wine.
I start slurring my words. It's jet lag. It ain't wine. So I had this weird, you know, high and low growing up. Didn't really think twice about it. Went to France in school. Ended up...
Went to France while
in school. So I studied abroad there and then went back to finish my thesis and ended up getting pseudo-adopted by two families. Whoa. One became... they were an amazing older couple who became like my French grandparents. And the dad, Guy, he would lead these seminars on wine for our school. So I got to go to 9 of them because they all took place in our living room. Which was fantastic. And then my other adoptive family lived in Nantes, so in the Loire. And, you know, that is just kind of the epicenter of natural wine, to use a term I don't like very much. But, you know, very real wine being made, as I would come to discover later. And I think we had some amazing cider paired with crepes that just changed a lot of things for me. And then... you know, I was technically not legal drinking age yet, came back to the U.S., sort of forgot about wine. And then it was Jason Malumed, who's now a partner at MFW in New York and New Jersey in PA.
Okay.
Yeah, Michael Folk Wine.
Okay.
I think that's what it stands for. MFW, they're an amazing importer of small production wines. He really kind of reignited my interest and, you know... Francophile at heart, so anything that was going to get me overseas, you know, as a business expense, I was game.
Amazing.
Yes.
Well, we have to take a short break, and we will be back with Jennifer and get into kind of this idea of talking about what is natural wine, what isn't it, why has it become such a phenomenon, and also getting a little bit behind the question, how does wine get into restaurants? I am personally fascinated by restaurant wine lists and why restaurants have certain wines, why they don't, and we're going to get into talking about your former / a little bit current life of being a wine rep. So just hang tight while we take a short break. Head over to heritageradionetwork.org. Make sure you check out all the other amazing podcasts on Heritage and become a member.
We are a member-supported radio station broadcasting live weekly more than 35 shows all about food and drink, in and around food and drink. Again, heritageradionetwork.org to support us and check out the other shows. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be right back.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hey, radio. We're back. It's Cam and Amanda from Food Book Fair. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair.
where we talk about what we're reading, watching, listening to with our friends and family in and around the food and media worlds. We're joined today by Jennifer Green, who is the founder and publisher and maker of an amazing new wine magazine called Glue Glue. Again, Glue Glue, that's the sound for when delicious real wine slips down your throat. Hey, Jennifer.
Hello.
Quickly, where can everyone find Glue Glue?
You can find Glue Glue on our website, glueglue.magazine.com, or at a host of retailers, the first of which is actually Now Serving.
Remember Now Serving, amazing culinary cookbook store, is also our partner at Food Book Fair LA. So when we're in LA, March 2nd through 4th, which is right about this time, you should be able to pick up a copy directly from them or visit them at Far East Plaza in Chinatown.
Amazing. Yeah. Worth a check. If you sign up for the Glue Glue Magazine newsletter, we send out a weekly newsletter on Sundays with an active updated list of all of our stockists. And it is growing by word of mouth, which is the only way things should grow.
Amazing. Foodieoticals for life.
Foodieoticals for life.
So what when I'm first of all, so thrilled to meet you in person. And when we just heard that a little bit of a story about you selling wine in LA and being a wine rep. And maybe some listeners out there don't really know what that means even, and they don't know, and I'm still learning, even though I have a former life in restaurants, like how does wine get into restaurants? Who chooses the bottles? And how can they make a choice with, like, as it seems like, infinite choices? So the model of selling wine to restaurants is kind of old school in a way, right? You tell us about your life a little bit as a rep and what that means, being a wine rep.
Sure. I mean, I think being a wine rep is no different than being any other sort of salesperson. You're hawking some wares, you're peddling around some bottles, maybe some open bottles in the back of your car, strapped in with a seatbelt.
Like that's the LA version.
That's the LA version. The New York version is getting jostled on the subway and knocking them down a flight of stairs. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. The importer or distributor selects the wines. Oftentimes it's on the recommendation of someone who's, you know, living in that country or very much in the know. And ideally, the importer develops a sort of personality around the portfolio. So this is the collection of producers that they are selling. They should all have some sort of cohesive thread. The importer or distributor works with a host of sales reps that have a particular territory usually. The sales rep goes around either on the subway or in a car, sometimes sitting on the 101 for many hours a day, and books appointments with buyers at restaurants, bars, and wine shops. Hopefully, you know, these people keep their appointments so that when you've sat through an hour of traffic to get to them, they're there and their place of business is open. You walk in, you lay out, ideally, you know, 6 to 8 bottles. Don't really want to overwhelm. You have sort of a sense of what they're looking for to fill certain slots on their list, or you're really excited to bring them some new arrivals that have just inbounded. You ideally have the right wines chilled. You open them up. You do a little, you know, song and dance. They're like, I like this. I don't like this. Oftentimes, you don't know on the spot what they're going to buy. You leave. You hear minutes, hours, days, weeks, sometimes months later, oh, I would like 2 cases of this. You're like, okay, that doesn't meet our minimum of 3 cases. Is there something else you'd like to add? Sometimes they're like, oh, well, it's been so many months now. Come back with, you know, another lineup. You come back with another lineup. You eventually make the sale. Sometimes, you know, people just order blind. You'll send out your portfolio and they'll say, okay, that Chardonnay looks amazing. I've been looking for it for over a year. I want it right now before it's gone. Small production, low intervention wine is naturally, you know, smaller yield. So a lot of this wine is sought after because of the quality, but also because of the quantity.
So only certain distributors
are able to sell certain wines.
Exactly. So they'll have, what's the word?
Exclusivity.
Yes. They'll have exclusivity over that wine in that particular area. So sometimes a wine could be represented by, say, Louis Dresner on the East Coast and then Farm Wine Imports on the West Coast because they are the West Coast distributor of many of those wines. You're not going to find, a farm wine on the East Coast, but you will see the Louis Dresner back label on a farm wine on the West Coast.
It's like art galleries and artist representation.
I don't know much about that, but sounds like a similar
world. You got your LA gallery, you got your New York gallery.
That makes sense.
Wine labels are something we could have a whole other show about.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we could.
I think you started to touch upon this when you used the word low intervention wines.
Yes.
So let's talk about this phrase natural wine.
Oh, yes.
It's something that seems to be on the tip of everyone's tongue. We're a natural wine bar. We have natural wines. What to you, what does that mean? And how should we think about what a natural wine is or isn't?
Sure. So wine is like food. All food was organic before chemicals were introduced. All wine was natural before chemicals were introduced. And now we have to specifically label food as organic or wine as natural. The difference being that organic is a certification and natural is not. So you can be organic certified, biodynamic certified. You can't be natural certified. And I actually hope that day never comes because, as Hank from La Clarine says, if you label it, you will kill it. It is a spirit. It's a very loose set of philosophies, which is a blessing and a curse. Like I said earlier, natural mouth is very much in the mouth of the beholder. It depends, my dad would never describe his favorite white Burgundy, Domaine Le Fleuve, as a natural wine. He wouldn't say, oh, I love natural wines, especially this one. However, it is very much a natural wine, as I often point out to him when he says, oh, you mean natural wines, wines that taste like vinegar? And I'm like, no, Dad, those are flawed wines. Yes, maybe they could have used a little bit more care in the cellar, and maybe they wouldn't be displaying volatile acidity. But being a flawed wine does not mean it's a natural wine. And the whole problem with the word or the term natural wine is that it's very easily co-opted to mean, oh, this wine has personality and therefore any flaw is accepted. Or the converse, where it's becoming very popular now and trendy to call something a natural wine, and corporate winemakers are just going to jump on the bandwagon and say, oh, this wine is natural, it's organic, and we don't fuck shit up in the cellar, you know. So there are two elements to what people describe as natural wine, which is the farming and then the work in the cellar. You definitely want to be organic or biodynamic to start with. A lot of people say wine is made in the vineyard, which is, only partially true because grapes don't, put themselves in a barrel and don't decide when to bottle themselves and whatnot. But you really do, in my opinion, want to mess with the wine as little as is necessary when it gets to the cellar. You want to let it do its thing, but you don't want to let it develop flaws that can be crippling to the wine, or when it travels halfway around the world, you don't want it to present as a wine that the winemaker didn't intend. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of sulfur can be your friend.
That was extremely informative.
That'd be a great t-shirt line. A little bit of sulfur can be your friend.
That's a very polarizing statement too. So you got to be careful what kind of place you're walking around with a t-shirt like that.
You get wine thrown on you, Kim. Thrown on your t-shirt.
Hopefully. I don't know. Hopefully not.
Well, make it'll it be a, like PETA throwing a...
Yeah. Exactly. Make it a
that's
red
what I was
t-shirt.
Envisioning.
But speaking of places where that t-shirt might be welcome, one of the other things that Glue Glue produces is a map.
of places to drink. And the one I'm looking at currently is the Los Angeles version, Your Guide to Spontaneous Sipping and Slurping in the City of Angels, which is sort of about, as you said, gently illegal wine consumption. Can you tell us more about that? It's a word of mouth guide, which is, you know, we love spreading things by word of mouth as well. Information, stories, wine. Tell us more.
Absolutely. The idea came about one day where I was not focused on enunciating and said, oh, I'll check Google Maps instead of Google Maps to try to get somewhere.
Oh my gosh, that's going to be our catchphrase now. We'll check Google Maps.
Exactly. Hopefully, you know, you're slurring because you're jet lagged and not drunk while driving. But I have just these amazing resources in LA that really taught me to explore the food scene and also the wine scene. I took my two favorite ladies, Victoire Loop, who used to be with Le Fooding and currently does food tours for Airbnb, works as a freelance stylist and reviewer and a host of different things. She has an amazing website called In the Loop, and I tapped her for all of our restaurant recommendations. I said, these all have to be places with very little pretense where you can easily sneak in a thermos in a, you know, coffee style kind of way. Yes, a thermos full of wine. And then I asked my favorite drinker, my friend Courtney Walsh, who works at Domaine LA, reps Amy Atwood Selections, which is the West Coast distributor of Jenny and Francois, and also works at Alimento and Cosa Bona, two amazing restaurants in LA. So she has her hands in a lot of different areas of the wine scene. And together we came up with this sprawling map of LA that makes LA look way more manageable than it actually is.
I'm actually, you can hear this.
You guys, it's so cool. Again, you can get it on glugluemagazine.com, right?
Right. And it is designed by Anatole Zhang.
I just held this up to the microphone as if like this.
If you could see through the microphone.
Yeah.
But Anatole is an amazing, amazing jack of all trades. He is the son of a cider maker in Normandy, whose cider I used to sell in LA, a designer of wine labels, a ballet dancer, among other things. Check him out at AZ Illustration on Instagram.
But we got, I mean, this is going to function as our eating map too for Food Book Fair LA. Sap Coffee Shop, Gorilla Tacos, all these, Baru, Cosa Buona, as you said, Giusta, the takeout, all these places that we had not thought you could drink wine at. You're opening up a new world.
Get my thermos ready.
I recommend the insulated clean canteen for hot beverages.
Pack it up.
It will also keep it will also keep wine at its perfect, slightly chilled temperature.
Why exactly?
Yeah, there we go. But we love this map. We love seeing your magazine in print. Just a quick question as we wrap up. I know you guys do print as well as video work with your partner, Lendl. If you could talk a little bit more about that and the different ways in which you try to impart texture.
Absolutely. So I think Lendl definitely thinks of video as moving photo, and it's a very tactile medium in that way, is taking something still and making it dynamic. What we've really been liking lately is just putting videos on loop without sound. So you can experience them as you're scrolling through a site and you aren't committed to staring at your screen for, you know, 2 minutes and 30 seconds. He does make some amazing narrative videos, which we'll definitely be exploring down the road. But as far as Glue Glue being an experiential sort of travel guide around wine, since since each issue focuses on a specific region, we definitely want to convey the movement and the dynamics of traveling to that place and being there. So we're actually headed to Mexico for the next issue.
Amazing.
And we'll be seeing how much we can use the camera walking across the border.
You want to tell us, give us a little preview about what you're trying to do?
Absolutely.
There? And then in the meantime, again, glugluemagazine.com, and you can also find it at Now Serving, among other many fine places where books are sold. Books and magazines are sold, and you can find Gluglu at Food Book Fair.
You sure can. And we will be freshly returned from Mexico with our good friend Jeff Vieira, who runs Farm Wine Imports, along with his partner Kevin. He'll be accompanying us across the border down to Mexico and over to Beachy Winery in right by Tecate. They, as far as we know, are the only quote-unquote natural wine producer that's currently being exported out of Mexico. So we're basically going to take them, throw a dart, draw a bullseye, and explore what the ripple effect is of being kind of the first mover in a market. How much is motivated by authenticity? How much is motivated by trend? And then what the response is from the world looking in.
We can't wait to see what you guys turn up with that. Really love how you are doing work in print with the magazine, as well as with the maps, as well as what you're sharing with us online with video and your site and the newsletter. This combination of online and offline in real life stuff is in a way to sort of tell stories or translate the narratives of low impact wines that are super delicious and have, you know, wonderful people and stories behind them. It's really inspiring.
Yes.
And huge congratulations. We know how much work goes into something.
Well,
like glue glue.
It's and worth you it to this ecosystem of amazing gals like yourself and guys too.
Yeah. So Jennifer Green of Glue Glue Magazine. Well, thank you. I was like, welcome. We've had her already.
We can do this all over again.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
For being a friend of Food Book Fair.
Absolutely.
We'll see you around.
See you in LA.
See everybody in LA. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Recommended reading is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Ever wonder what kind of podcast Julia Child would have made? Probably would have been one where she introduced you to all of her latest discoveries and favorite people. And that's exactly the tradition we're following on Inside Julia's Kitchen, a podcast of the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. Join me, Todd Shulkin, your host, and the Foundation's Executive Director, as I bring you inside the Foundation's world to meet the bright lights of today's food universe, just as Julia used to do from her own famous kitchen. New episodes air on Heritage Radio Network, Wednesdays at noon Eastern. Listen in.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen. Thank you.